Today, cities are home to over half of the world's population and are responsible for around 70% of greenhouse gas emissions. As they increasingly grapple with the adverse effects of climate breakdown, they represent a critical unit to mobilize in the green transition. Yet, amidst these challenges, pioneering cities around the world are forging a path towards a sustainable future for their communities and the planet. And Danish cities and municipalities are making historic contributions to that endeavor.
You're listening to Sound of Green, a podcast from State of Green. Each episode, we invite experts and stakeholders to convey Danish perspectives on a given challenge of the global green transition. Through decades of experience, Denmark has turned many of these challenges into opportunities. By sharing these experiences, we hope to help you do the same.
In this episode, you'll hear from the C40 Network, the City of Copenhagen, Realdania, and Grundfos, as we explore how cities are taking the lead in the race to net zero. Cities worldwide face mounting pressures, from climate change impacts to growing population demands to strain on essential resources like water and clean air. Thus, it's not exactly hard to answer the question of why focusing on cities is imperative in the green transition. However, there's also another dimension to that question, which concerns leadership and cooperation.
I actually think there's a more interesting answer to that, which is when you look at a global challenge like climate breakdown, the only way it can be solved is by global cooperation. And that's a thing that's in short supply. But one of the groups of powerful leaders in the world that have found a way to work together across cultural, economic, geographic barriers is mayors.
This is Mark Watts, the executive director of C40. C40 is a global performance-based network of nearly 100 mayors of the world's leading cities that are united in action to confront the climate crisis. And as Mark explains, city leadership has proven to be a productive force in the green transition of our societies.
There's a lot of competition, but it's a competition that's a race to the top. They're trying to copy the best ideas that make their cities more livable and more sustainable from each other and adopt them. They're not fighting with each other. And they're certainly not saying, we're not willing to tackle the pollution in our city unless you tackle the pollution in your city first. So that's the big advantage of working with cities.
C40 has been facilitating partnership and positive competition around city-driven climate action since 2005. Mark was part of the network's creation, and the impetus came from the simple admission that no one geography holds all the answers on how to create a sustainable society.
When I was tasked by the Mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, with creating London's first climate action plan, and one of the things I discovered quite early on was we had a lot of enthusiasm in London, but we didn't have a lot of experience about how you did a climate action plan. And so we looked out to the world, and actually it was Copenhagen, Stockholm, San Francisco, Toronto, a few other cities that we found were a bit ahead of us that we could learn from. And the process of that engagement just led us to think in London, shouldn't we just be doing this all the time? It's a bit strange for those who work in city governments now.
Since its founding, C40 has supported its members to deliver rapid, transformative climate action in their cities through data-driven climate action planning, forums for knowledge exchange, and global diplomacy and advocacy. And after nearly two decades, the results speak for themselves.
What's kept us going for 20 years is it's working. So if you look across our members, for the data that we have, three quarters of them are cutting their emissions faster than their respective nation states.
There are a few reasons why the city level is well positioned to drive emissions down, and in many cases even outpace national efforts. While cities have limited control over the much-needed national reconfiguration of our energy supplies, they have shown themselves effective when it comes to shaping the demand side through green policies and investments, as Mark explains.
So I think what you're seeing at the city level is they're not in so much in charge of the supply side levers, but they are really making a difference on the demand side. So the clean air zones that are now coming to epitomise big cities, along with much more investment in cycling, making it safe to walk around a city, public transport to be cheap and fast and affordable. These are effectively policies that are taking out the demand for petrol from gas from cities.
On a more foundational level, it's a question of proximity and the perceived locality of an issue. Because citizens experience the most immediate and tangible harms of climate change close to home, they'll often direct demands for clean air and increased livability at local leaders. And in Mark's experience, the mayors he works with have these demands front and center in their efforts.
That's what they hear from residents on a day-to-day basis. So that's the demand push. If your child is suffering with asthma or your older relatives are dying prematurely because of poor air quality, people can sort of see it and experience it, and they want that kind of change.
Of the nearly 100 trailblazing cities that are now a part of the C40 network, most of them are so-called megacities. These are cities that already have, or are expected to have, a population exceeding 3 million people by 2030. However, smaller cities have also been included in the network and recognized as climate innovators. And one of the first to do so was Copenhagen.
The C40 is a global mayors network consisting of mostly large cities all over the world, big mega cities. And Copenhagen is not a mega city. We have around 650,000 inhabitants, but we are very innovative when it comes to the green transition. And we think we have some ideas and some results that we'd like to share with the rest of the world.
This is Sophie Hestorp Andersen, the Lord Mayor of Copenhagen and Vice Chair of the C40 Steering Committee. Despite being one of the smallest cities in the network, the Danish capital hasn't shied away from big ambitions when it comes to climate action. At the beginning of the 2010s, Copenhagen made a number of green commitments, including a goal to become the world's first CO2 neutral capital. And that has put the city on a path that has required sweeping, holistic efforts, as the Lord Mayor explains.
In 2012, Copenhagen not only committed itself to a cloudburst plan and to climate adaptation plans, but also to lower our CO2 emissions, our climate footprint, and to be climate neutral in 2025. And since then, we have been working with roadmaps, and we have made the district heating in our municipality green by using green energies. We have made the transition to renewables gradually. We have also had a focus on transportation and also waste management in order for us to lower our overall climate footprint of the city.
With these efforts, Copenhagen has managed to reduce its emissions by 80%. Along the way, Copenhagen's membership of C40 has been instrumental in ensuring that the city worked purposefully to realize its ambitions. Because, as the Lord Mayor states, global cooperation generates the inspiration and resources imperative to making smart choices.
The C40 Mayors Network has helped us in Copenhagen to make sure that we did the right measurements and make sure that we had the right data, that we could compare them to other cities globally and internationally, and that the things that we are doing are actually helping and being realistic and not only fine words on a piece of paper laying down in the drawer. If you don't work data-based, it's very difficult to make sure that you actually do the right thing.
Importantly, Copenhagen is by no means the only Danish city pursuing green innovation. And across the country, cities are moving in a greener direction together.
Even though Copenhagen has been at the forefront in many ways, we can still learn from other municipalities and cities in Denmark. And one of them is Middelfart, municipality where they have also been working with a climate budget, and now we are working also with a climate budget model in Copenhagen and trying to develop together with Middelfart and others. And that means that it's not only one city who is ahead, but actually we are transforming Denmark within Denmark, within the Danish national state.
As a matter of fact, the scale and success of the city-driven green transformation of Denmark is currently writing international climate history. And that story is all about turning grand global ambitions into locally feasible climate action. In 2019, the Danish Philanthropic Association, Realdania, initiated the DK 2020 project with the ambition to accelerate efforts to meet the Paris Agreement at a municipal level. The idea was born out of work that C40 had done to create a climate action planning standard that was compliant with the Paris Agreement, as Realdania's head of projects, Pelle Bornonville, explains.
We funded a sort of a study of the feasibility of having Copenhagen, Oslo, and Stockholm's climate action plans converted into the format that is compliant with the C40 standard. And once that was in place and we had, you know, we had hard data that Copenhagen's did live up to the requirements, we thought maybe this could be applied to the other 97 municipalities in Denmark. So that's where the idea started, in this knowledge exchange and making that that tool available to Danish municipalities.
DK 2020 has made Denmark the first country in the world where all municipalities are drawing up climate action plans to meet the targets set in the Paris Agreement. After 5 years of intense work, 96 out of Denmark's 98 municipalities have developed Paris-compatible climate action plans, with the last two on the way. So, what goes into creating that kind of climate action planning? The DK 2020 effort can be broken down into four main components, as Pelle explains.
So really four parts. You know, a comprehensive climate accounting, and comprehensive meaning all significant emission sources accounted for. Second, a quite different way of understanding and tackling you know, the climate threats in terms of developing their climate adaptation part of the plan. Many, many municipalities in Denmark had worked, you know, diligently with rain as the primary threat and had like enormously detailed plans for how to handle extreme rain. Far less so were they working, again, comprehensively with understanding sort of all of the possible threats. The third leg is very much this, you know, cross-organizational foundation or cross-organizational involvement in the plan development within the municipality. So not just the small climate department and a few directors and maybe a mayor, but really across all of the sort of business areas for the municipality, from, you know, from health and welfare services to youth and education to et cetera, building awareness of the individual department's sort of responsibility for distinct parts of emissions and threats. And then finally, you know, consensus and base building with the municipality and all of the other actors, you know, local youth, local, you know, populace, local businesses, really building alliances and understanding.
Today, all DK 2020 partners have extended their commitment until 2027 with the Climate Alliance, a new partnership that supports Danish municipalities to move from climate planning to climate action. And when asked about what that process entails, Pelle acknowledges that the answer is still in progress.
Yeah, this is very much a question of you know, laying the tracks as we roll.
There are two reasons why the Danish municipalities' move from plan to action might not be a straightforward one. Firstly, being first movers means that you can't necessarily rely on existing methodologies. And secondly, climate changes and sustainability challenges don't stand still while we make plans to tackle them. So in order for the Danish municipalities' upcoming actions to be meaningful, continuous revisions of the plans are needed.
Between Christmas 2020 and spring of 2021, the first were completed. These guys are now nearing a stage where they need to revise their plans. And we didn't have sort of a methodology in place to how do you revise? How do you do, good, exact revisions, but without necessitating completely new plans from the bottom up, because it's a big piece of work. So that's fairly far progressed and is now in live test with the first 11 municipalities that are actually now doing revisions to the plans.
A related focus of the Climate Alliance is to make resources available in this next phase that account for the uncertainty ahead. Because more likely than not, implementation will bring about unforeseen challenges to even the best of plans, as Pelle explains.
As municipalities travel along their plan, they'll find out there will be issues that they can't solve and maybe need external consulting to do, or knowledge projects or what have you. So the idea is that we've set aside some financing to address particular issues as they arise, barriers for implementation, knowledge gaps, whatever that comes in along the way.
Luckily, the Climate Alliance has strong support from knowledge partners like C40. And from Mark Watt's perspective, he hopes that the initial success of the DK 2020 experiment will travel far and wide.
The DK 2020 program here in Denmark, which has been absolutely amazing, getting every local authority across Denmark to have a Paris Agreement compliant plan. There's no other country that's adopted it in that kind of holistic way. I'm hoping we're going to see Danish-style DK 2020s in, I guess it's going to be something 2025, isn't it? Not 2020, in lots of countries coming up soon.
And according to Pelle Bournonville, that is definitely a possibility.
Given the fact that we've taken an international context that works in 7 continents and in widely different geographies and widely different, mayoral powers and all that, and adapted it to Denmark, and added components that were relevant to the Danish context. I won't say it's easy, but it's absolutely feasible.
Core to the success of such an effort is partnership.
The trick is simply to find the right partners. The trick is sort of we've been lucky with local government Denmark and the regions, and having some strong knowledge partners locally. But there are similar organizations almost everywhere. You could definitely develop that.
Another vital partnership for cities is with the companies who'll provide the solutions and technologies needed to move from plan to action. Fortunately, Danish companies have shown themselves more than willing to partner and innovate in the city space. One of the solution providers that has partnered with Danish cities and municipalities in fulfilling their climate goals is Grundfos. Grundfos is a global water technology company. And as their group head of sustainability, Louise Koch, can attest to, their mission is in many ways shared with the cities they work with.
So our purpose in Grundfos is to pioneer solutions to the world's water and climate challenges and improve quality of life for people. And I would dare to say that that is the same mission that cities are on in many ways, building just resilient communities for their citizens and ensuring that they are climate resilient and water safe for the future.
Water plays a key role in the green transition of our cities, both in terms of mitigating emissions and adapting our supply and treatment of water to the threats brought on by climate change. It's estimated that the water utility sector accounts for 2% of global CO2 emissions. That's roughly the same as the aviation industry. So implementing smart water solutions in our cities is imperative, as Louise explains.
And the thing is that moving and treating water actually takes quite a lot of energy. So we need to break that cycle of as we need to move and treat water more for a growing population in a world impacted by climate change. So energy efficient low carbon solutions become really important. One big opportunity for carbon emission reductions is in the provision of drinking water or heating, cooling of large commercial buildings or hospitals, where we typically come in with solutions that can help reduce carbon emissions of what they have in place through intelligent pump solutions and water management solutions.
In turn, the cities hold the local knowledge that allows for Grundfos solutions to have the greatest possible impact.
So we come with the technical solutions and with the knowledge of water treatment, how to process water, whether it's for industry or drinking water or cooling or heating in buildings. But of course, the application in a specific context, whether it's Copenhagen as the largest city in Denmark or whether it's a small municipality in Western Jutland, that takes a local knowledge, and that's where it's important to partner.
Grundfos has taken their partnership with cities to a global scale by partnering with C40. And engaging in a global network of cities is incredibly meaningful in terms of developing scalable solutions, as Louise can attest to.
And they come together and share experiences and share solutions on a global scale. And for us as a solution provider, this is a very unique forum, both for us to gain insights into what are the needs inspiring our innovation of solutions, but also having a more trusted space for partnering and piloting solutions that can then be scaled across other cities.
In C40's experience, companies also have a lot to gain from partnering with cities that have committed to climate leadership because they are shaping the trajectory of both markets and regulation, as Mark Watts explains.
Companies like working with city governments that are part of an international network because they're much likely to adopt market-leading technologies and strategies and regulations faster than the ones who are not. You can really see why you would invest in working with one city or invest in working in a network of cities to go from a small market to a big market quite quickly, but also to get a handle on where, you know, on where regulation is going.
So far, we've established that cities are leading the way on climate action and make great innovation hubs for solution providers. Even so, cities still face many of the same challenges as nation states and other entities in the green transition. This is something that Lord Mayor of Copenhagen, Sophie Hestrup Andersen, can attest to.
When we look at the challenges for the green transition, of course, we have to admit that sometimes we see barriers when it comes to lawmaking and incentives. Some of the challenges that we are facing today is that we want to have even more renewable energy. But today it has become gradually more difficult to put up new windmills and to make sure that the existing ones can still go on also in the future. And also solar panels on public buildings is something that we work closely to the government to make sure that we have the right laws that makes the incentives to actually do it. Because it's very difficult as a municipality to make investments and to convince other businesses to make investments if there is no incentives pointing in that direction.
Another huge challenge for cities concerns consumption. Cities are hotspots of human activity, with each economic transaction and expenditure of resources translating directly to CO2 emissions on a citizen level. And for a city like Copenhagen, this presents a significant hurdle in living up to international climate commitments.
Living in the global north, we are rich people compared to many other places in the world. And it also means that we spend a lot of our money on clothing, on how we live, on transportation. When we look at the Copenhageners as such, each citizen in Copenhagen has a carbon footprint of nearly 10 tons of CO2 per year. If we look at the Paris Treaty, we need to get that down to 3 tons per year. So that's quite difficult.
While this challenge is especially pressing for cities like Copenhagen today, it will gradually become a more and more universal problem as urban population and urban living standards increase around the world. And as the Lord Mayor explains, regulating citizen behavior and preferences requires mutual dialogue and engagement.
This is not a place where we as municipality just can go and tell the Copenhageners, stop eating red meat, or you shouldn't drive a gasoline car, or stuff like that. This is a way where we have to be in a dialogue, and we have to make it easy to make a green transition for our local citizens.
As each city grapples with its own set of local issues, there's one overarching challenge they all face, which has only recently gotten the attention it deserves. Because despite their frontline role in battling climate challenges, cities often find themselves relegated to the sidelines in global climate negotiations. And as Mark Watts from C40 explains, this prevents the constructive spirit of city-driven climate leadership to penetrate possible political stalemates.
The challenge for cities getting into the space where global political decisions are being made is it's really just inertia. You know, this is the way that particularly the kind of post-Second World War settlement works. It's about governments coming together and voting about whether or not to do something. And so you have this lowest common denominator. There's a, as we've seen in the climate talks over a couple of decades now, the ability of a small number of nations to block everybody going forward. You really don't see that in the city space. It's the opposite dynamic.
This lack of multi-level collaboration is a problem and a missed opportunity. As analyses from C40 show, most national climate plans fail to consider what is happening at the subnational level, and thereby they disregard the potential for greater ambition by leveraging the momentum and capacity already present in cities. This issue is also top of mind in the partnership behind the Climate Alliance and their work with turning local climate plans into action, as Pelle Bornonville can attest to.
What we've realized and what our analyses of the plans have shown is that there is a very clear interrelationship between national government legislation and action and local government legislation and action. The two support each other to a degree which may have surprised a lot of people. In particular, you know, for us, it definitely, you know, really put, you know, hit the point home that we are deeply interrelated and interdependent. It's not just a sort of a patting each other on the back ish. There are real numbers and real actions and real reductions to be found here.
Luckily, a shift seems to be happening. The latest COP may have marked a possible turning point in recognizing the importance of subnational climate action, as Mark Watts states.
We saw at COP28 last year, opening up the first time that subnational leaders were invited to be in the room at the table at the same time as the prime ministers and presidents. And I think the energy there, the positivity, the willingness to take up some of the bigger, more immediate political challenges that you see at the subnational level has left a mark. And we saw 72 countries at the end of that COP committing to relook at their NDCs, their national commitments, in the context of what's being delivered and promised at a city level.
In spite of local and global obstacles, leaders in the city space continue to take on some of the toughest challenges in the green transition with perseverance. For the C40 network, one of their top priorities looking ahead is ensuring a just transition in what is undeniably going to be a massive change to our societies and economies as we move in a greener direction.
All should be for the best, that everyone everywhere has a greater chance of thriving when we take the pollution out of our economies. But the attention to detail to make sure, particularly those who are most vulnerable now or threatened with losing their jobs in polluting industries, are really thought about in policy and made sure that they are going to benefit and see the opportunity in the transition.
While the narrative of a just transition is often connected to the notion of reskilling the workforce, there are places in the world where city planning is directly and crucially linked to people's ability to make a living, as Mark explains.
We're particularly finding in our cities in Africa and South Asia that the combination of temperature and humidity is getting to levels where people can't work outside for quite a few days of the year in societies where a big chunk of the population earn their living working outdoors and get a daily wage. So how you can design cities to be better shaded, naturally shaded with tree cover and have safe spaces where people can go when there's intense heat and ensure that there's water supply even in the most informal of settlements.
In the city of Copenhagen, consumption-based emissions remain a top issue. And one of the initiatives that has already shown promise is targeting the municipality's own procurement, as Lord Mayor Sofie Hæstorp Andersen can report.
A few years ago, we set a goal that the procurements on food, we wanted to lower that with 25% in 2025. And I can say that we have already lowered it with 17%. And we are going to reach that goal next year. And that makes me really happy and really proud, because it shows that there is a way. Our goal is in 2035 that we have lowered the emissions with 50%, not only on food, but on all our procurement. And it's going to be very exciting to see how we're going to do that.
Another big focus looking ahead is the revision of the city's climate action plan, including the goal of climate neutrality. The Lord Mayor has acknowledged that it won't be feasible by 2025 as originally planned. However, she's adamant that this kind of ambition hasn't been futile, but an all-important driving force in the green progress that the city continues to make.
Even though we didn't reach our goal, I'm very proud that we get to reach the 82% of the goal, because that means that we can actually make a change. And if you don't set out ambitious goals, you don't reach them either. I mean, it is as simple as that. So, and this is why we're trying to push ourselves to go even further.
Big ambitions are also central to Grønfos work to provide cities with solutions and guidance. Because, as Louise Koch explains, the company's decarbonization goals for the future are highly dependent on how their customers implement and use their technology.
When we look at our net zero commitment for 2050 across the value chain, 99% of that is actually in the use of our products, in the hands of our customers, in the operations of our customers. So we are very much on a shared mission to decarbonize our value chain and to help our customers decarbonize.
This sense of purpose is especially strong when it comes to Grønfos' continued collaboration with Danish municipalities.
Although Denmark, of course, is a small part of the global carbon emissions, we can and we should lead the way. And when municipalities in Denmark show that they can develop climate transition action plans, they can inspire municipalities and cities around the world.
Ultimately, this is the shared hope of those working in and with Danish cities and municipalities. And as Pelle Bornonville from Realdania states, the ambition of the DK 2020 program and now the Climate Alliance, has always been to share Danish experiences for the benefit of international action takers and decision makers.
We're very interested in having these conversations and sharing all of our experiences and knowledge. We've translated it all. It's all available online. We've had really positive conversations with geographies as different as Maharashtra to Wales. So let's continue that conversation and we can help.
While Danish cities and municipalities certainly don't have all the answers, they exhibit the immense potential and willingness that resides in cities all over the world to spearhead the green transition. Fortunately, their success is freely available for anyone to imitate and elevate.
I'm not saying that we have sort of found the holy grail here and our model is the right of all, but there is definitely inspiration to be had. And by all means, as we've been preaching to our own municipalities, there's no copyrights on climate action. You know, beg, borrow, steal and accelerate your work and show the other guy that you can do him one up and then everybody wins.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sound of Green. We want to give a special thanks to Mark Watts from the C40 Network, Lord Mayor Sofie Hæstorp Andersen of the City of Copenhagen, Pelle Bornonville from Realdania, and Louise Koch from Grønfos for sharing their insights. For more resources and case material on the Danish approach to city-driven climate action, you can visit our website, stateofgreen.com. Here, you can dive deeper into Denmark's experiences with creating a sustainable society and connect with the solution providers that make it possible.